Welcome to Stories of Change and Creativity. I'm Judy Oscom, a professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at Texas State University. On this podcast, I feature interviews with professionals who inspire, educate, and motivate.
My name is Melissa Fontenette Mitchell. I am a fine art photographer. I'm a wife, a mother, a daughter, a sister, aunt, and a trustworthy friend.
This is the first episode in a two-part interview with Texas fine art photographer Melissa Fontenette Mitchell. Her work tells stories about the civil rights movement, women's rights, and community issues. Melissa's photography has been exhibited at venues in Texas, Florida, and New York. I hope you enjoy our conversation about change and creativity. And I've had the pleasure of having you come and talk to my class at Texas State University. And I appreciate that. And that was fun. But I want to ask you, what is your creative process? How do you approach a project? Because as an award-winning photographer, you've done a number of different projects. How do you first approach a project?
So just to give you a little background, I knew my purpose when I was 9 years old. See, what happened is that my teacher in third grade sat us all around to ask us, what did we want to be when we grow up? A lot of the students in the class, you know, spoke about doctors, policemen, teachers, firemen, nurses. And I was the only one that raised my hand and said, fine art photographer. And she looked at me like I knew what I was talking about. But the kids in the class, they laughed. It's like, what is a fine art photographer? I mean, this was like back in the early 1800s.
No.
But I knew what my purpose was as a kid. So when you know what your purpose is and you're following that dream and that passion, then it makes it easier for you to follow the approach of your specialty. Mine is creativeness. What has worked for me, Judy, all these years, before I even go out and shoot, I say a quick prayer, God, show me the vision that you want me to see, not me. Because we can miss the most important aspect of what we're shooting for in the details. He's all in the details. So that's a part of my creative process. Then once I take those pictures, then I go back into my edit studio to really look at the pictures that tells a story, that expresses the emotions, that shares the vibrant colors, that stimulates our thought process, how we feel that day, how we felt. Sometimes it takes us back to childhood. So my creative process is very detailed along with prayer.
Well, let me go back to when you were 9 years old. I think that's fascinating. How did you then live that path when you knew at such an early age? What did you do? Because we have a lot of listeners that might be in college who are trying to find their purpose. And how did you know, and what steps did you take to live that purpose?
Well, that's a good question, Judy. I really didn't know what to do. Back then, there weren't really mentors as there are now. But my parents knew it. So those are the largest influencers in my life. So they knew I was creative. They knew I liked photography. But how do you encourage your kid to make a career out of it? So my parents are educators as well. All along through that process, I held on to what my purpose was. So I'll never forget when my parents bought me my first new Kodak chromatic camera. I still have it with the little flash at the top that turns around.
Yes.
So that was my first camera. And I was so excited. But the thing about it is, well, how do you make a career out of being an artist, a fine art photographer at that? So I went off to college after middle school, high school, went off to college, thought about an art degree, but I was really smart about sustainability. What do I still do to sustain myself in a career, but also work jointly with my purpose and my dreams? So my degree is in marketing. I have done many years working in high tech, but I noticed every time I would have to travel, the first places I would visit would be art exhibits, galleries, museums. So that really kept stirring up, okay, Melissa, you really need to follow what your passion is, what your purpose, what your dreams. And I knew my visual art would be the type of art that would capture an audience. So how do you do that, as you asked me earlier? This is what my mentor taught me. If there's anything that you would do in life for free, what would you do? And second, if you find that you visit libraries, museums, or even just different reading materials, what draws you to a certain topic or subject or interest? If you find the same things in those areas, then you're on the road to success about understanding what your purpose is. So a lot of people that I've spoken with in the past, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I've enjoyed, you know, designing, moving furniture around my house. Okay, that might be a purpose. I might need to be in interior designing. Or, you know, I remember writing code when I was little, before anyone even thought about programming and code, writing codes and technology. So those are the things that you keep on finding of interest. And then I went into prayer. I asked God, hey, what is it that you want me to show the world that you have worked through me? That's what he showed me, visual art.
And you've done a lot of different type of projects. What projects do you think are you the most proud of?
Oh my gosh. There's
what awards you've been exhibited all over. Yes. What do you feel the most proud of? Or the fact that it delivered the message? You know, it might not be about you, but about the art and the work.
Two projects that really stands out that I would love to share with people around the world is during that time, I left off just a key point in that time when I said I wanted to be a fine art photographer. I also wanted to be a photographer at a presidential inauguration. I didn't know how to do that as a third grader, but I knew then that if I kept dreaming and I kept my focus and I trusted the Lord, that he would make a way. So Judy, I was selected as one of the photographers for President Obama's inauguration. How did I do that? I filled out the application. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't share it with anyone, because if I wouldn't have received it, then I wouldn't have been disappointed, not only in myself, but then everybody else asking, well, did you hear from them? So I filled out the application. All of a sudden, I receive emails from the Presidential Inauguration Committee. They inform me that Secret Service would do a little background check on me or what have you. And I'm like, okay. That's why it is so important, our integrity and our character, third grade all the way into adulthood, because who would have known that my background was going to be checked into the most detailed aspect of who I am as a person? So 2 weeks later, they notified me that I have been selected, and there were thousands of photographers that submitted their resumes and applications and portfolios. And I was one of those little individuals, the needle in the haystack, that God said, I want to make something big of this small molecule. So I went to Washington. I had credentials for the North Mall. I was so excited. That was my first time at a presidential inauguration. It still brings me back to that day. It was so cold. Being raised in the South, you know, the coldest we've ever had is maybe 22.
Yeah.
13 degrees and the ground feels like you're standing on ice. But I was so excited. I stood around people that was so excited about our country, where we were heading. A man that inspires a generation of hope, of prosperity, of just things that we never thought we would see in our country. So I thought that was it, Judy. I thought taking pictures at the North Mall was it. And so I left from the North Mall and I asked the people around me, where is the presidential parade? I'd never been to a presidential inauguration parade. So I walked probably, you know, DC's blocks are not like Austin or Round Rock.
Right.
They're like a half a mile or a quarter of a mile. So I walked from the North Mall of the Capitol all the way to Pennsylvania Avenue, probably a couple of miles. So I get there. I realized that you needed a ticket to get into the parade. So I went up and I asked this really nice lady, which to this very day, I didn't get her name, but I really do feel she was an angel, because she said, well, ma'am, you were supposed to have purchased a ticket 2 or 3 weeks ago. This is, you know, pretty much a clearance area. People had to be checked, background checked. And I said, okay. I said, well, thank you. I said, well, is there any place, you know, I can stand and take pictures? And she said, well, no, because we sort of have everything blocked off. And I said, okay. And everybody knows that I always end my day or speaking with a person, have a blessed day. And she called me back. I walked away. She said, man, why don't you come this way? I really do feel that I can trust you with coming in. And she said, you know, you're going to have to find us a seat. And I said, okay. So I knew that it was a God moment. So I said, okay, Father, it's showtime. And Judy, where I stood is the perfect location. I couldn't have stood too far to my right, because I would have missed President Obama and Michelle Obama coming out the limo. I couldn't stand too far to my left because the limo was just coming around, so I would have missed them coming out on the other side of the limo. At the perfect spot, they come out waving. I was so excited. Secret Service was standing in front of me. I was so excited. I almost missed taking pictures.
Sure.
But the picture I took resonated in the moment that in First Lady Michelle Obama's book, Becoming Michelle, she spoke about that moment when they got out of the limo and they waved to the people, and it felt like she had called me and interviewed me. So, Melissa, what happened? Tell me, how did it look in your perspective? So I actually placed that picture in the book on page, I think, 333 to remind me of that moment of hope. That moment, not just of hope of the president that we had just elected, but the moment of hope that God says, hey, I'm not finished with you yet. This is the vision I've put in you. So I want you to share this story with people so that they know that, hey, you don't come from a wealthy family. You don't come from all of these individuals that can open the door for you. You come from the Almighty King that can open any door for you. So that lesson I've shared with so many people, and I think people are excited from hearing my story about that opportunity, because I think they feel if that can happen to her, that can happen to me.
And I you shared that with my students, I remember, and showed your pictures, and oh my gosh, what a great moment.
Oh my God.
And whether it was luck or destiny or a combination, I think that's what people need to realize, that there are opportunities like that if you are ready to take them. And it sounds like you worked your career and your life to those moments. And you mentioned there was another project that you were also proud of as well.
Yes. This was so amazing. Again, it was during the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Movement and the signing of the Civil Rights Act. And I was selected as one of the photographers at the University of Texas, which hosted the whole week of events. All the presidents would come in to town, all these civil rights leaders, celebrities, you name it. And so I've always visioned that I would take a picture of all of the living presidents in a special venue. So the LBJ Library, that's where I just envisioned that, well, hold on, President Carter, President Bush, can you turn around and smile? President Obama, over here, you know, President Clinton, look at me, everybody look at me together. So this is all in my vision. I played it out in my head. And I got there the first day and I said, I'm so excited. And so I was in the media room and something kept on saying, you need to get over there and take pictures. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, here we go again. All the security, because, you know, Secret Service was here, FBI, all of your tier one security. I load up all my equipment. I loaded up all my credentials. I knew I had to go through two or three clearances. So I went over there and I found out that all of the presidents were coming in at different times. So they weren't coming in at the same time because of their schedule. So I was a little disappointed. It's like, oh. So I left that day. I actually cried in the car. You know, I was upset because we play up this thing in our head about what we're going to do and it doesn't happen. And I said, gosh, you know, I've worked really hard at this. You know, and I by all means, I'm not saying that I'm not grateful for the doors you've opened. And so I called Megan, which is my daughter, and she said, Mommy, it's okay. You know, tomorrow's a new day. Let's see what happens tomorrow. So fast forward, the next day comes. I'm excited about a new day. So I heard that little whisper probably around 11. And it's like, you need to head on over there. Melissa's like, oh, same thing as the previous day. Oh, credentials, clearance. But I walked into the LBJ Library, and lo and behold, there's this extremely tall woman. Okay, I'm only 5'3". So this lady is like maybe 5'11", 6'1". But I sort of recognize her from pictures I've seen in the past. So I said, but I'm going to go and speak with her. I said, hi, my name is Melissa Fontenot Mitchell and yada, yada, yada. And she said, well, I'm Lady Bird. I'm Linda Johnson Robb. And I said, nice meeting you. Looks just like her dad.
Yeah.
Personality, just amazing. And I said, can I take a picture of you? She said, sure. Let's take it by my dad's, you know, Texas limo. And so we sort of struck up a conversation. She said, if you're not doing anything, why don't you come up and I'd like to introduce you to someone. So I'm thinking, okay, God, I'm ready. You know, because I remember how this is getting ready to transpire.
How's it feels?
Yes. It's like, okay, I've done what you're leading me to do. So take everything ahead of me. So I get on the third floor, and lo and behold, she introduces me to Dr. Bernice King, Dr. King's daughter. So I'm nervous during that time because I've been into events and opportunities where there has been dignitaries and celebrities, and some people just choose not to be as friendly as others. So it still makes me a little nervous, but I said, hey, go for it, Melissa. You wouldn't be here if God had not opened these doors. So there's something positive that's going to come out of this. So I meet Dr. Bernice King. She was extremely friendly, warm, very smart, very driven, knew her purpose for rights for everyone. So we were in the library archive room. They were getting ready to go and speak because I can hear them in the audience getting ready to introduce them. So Linda and Bernice, I said, ladies, I said, can I just take just a couple of shots of you guys before you head out? And they said, sure. They were so nice and just so pleasant. And so there was all of the archives of LBJ's documents, you name it. I said, can I just get you guys to stand against the wall right there? Limited lighting. I had both of my cameras and I said, oh my gosh, you know, your worst enemy as a photographer is low lighting. You know, I didn't have time to be setting all these features on my camera. So I said, stand right there. Click, 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 click. Thank you, ladies. Have a wonderful, blessed day. Nice meeting you. Nice meeting you too. So I get back to the media room. And I said, oh my gosh, I cannot believe what just happened. I met two women from the daughters of two prominent leaders in our country. No one else was in there, Judy.
Wow.
So I said, okay, let's see what I did. You know, it's now you get to see it on your camera. And I still didn't recognize it until I went outside and put on my glasses. The photo, I don't know if I've shared this with you.
I haven't seen that one, huh?
Okay. But the photo that I took of the two ladies were standing in the front of the photo of their dads speaking about the Civil Rights Act and the signing of the act. So you're looking at the generation of bringing the Civil Rights Act into fruition, and then the daughters that is passing on that generation of still fighting for civil rights.
I love it.
Amazing. Just those two opportunities have really stood in me as a person to share the story with and to also to give a glimpse of hope to individuals out there that's struggling with, you know, what is my purpose?
And how do you tell people to be open to those moments?
You know, this is not my first rodeo as far as trust and faith. I tell everybody, faith is like working out and strengthening a muscle. So when you first go to the gym, your muscle is sort of jiggly. It's not formed. It's not strong. It doesn't have endurance. But the more you go to the gym and you work out those muscles, the stronger they get. So that's what I do, that association of my faith, is that the more that I believe, the more that I trust, the more the opportunities keep coming to me. And they are not opportunities that I have set forth of doing. They're opportunities that God says, well, this is for Melissa. No one else. This is for her. There's one for Judy. There's one for so-and-so and so-and-so. And those are pathways to our purpose. And that's how we are instrumental in this world.
But you've also, you had the courage or the wherewithal to take that opportunity.
Absolutely.
And so is that a, do you get over that? Are you fearful at first, or are you kind of overthinking it at first? Because I know some listeners are afraid to kind of make that leap. And I think that's all about change. And how do you let yourself be open to that opportunity?
Oh, I speak about that heavy in my, I'm a guest speaker in the school district as well. So I speak about those rejections. Those rejections, even to a person like me that have faith, that has courage, that has hope, that has trust. Rejection is just another form of saying, this wasn't for you. Keep trying. You got to pull up your bootstrap and keep trying. And that's what I teach my kids. So I'm not saying that this opportunity didn't look like it was for you, but what I am saying is there's an opportunity that looks just like it should be for you.
I love that. I love that. And speaking of how you approach life and everything, what's a little known fact that we might not know about you?
Oh, wow.
that you might not mind sharing? That's the question.
No. A little known fact about me is that I've always had a dream and a vision of becoming a White House staff photographer. That has been in all of my journals. That has been the little sticky note on my mirror in my room. I'm not sure how that's going to happen, Judy, because it's not because I haven't applied. It just hasn't happened yet. But I do believe, I strongly believe it's going to happen. Now, timing, when is it going to happen? I'm not sure. I might be a little 80-year-old woman in there saying, let's give her an opportunity to come here.
Oh, well, you have plenty of time. You have plenty of time.
Absolutely.
You do have plenty of time. I think hearing from mentors and people that have been there and done that is important. What are some of the strategies you share?
To write down what your interests are. Just sit down and write, keep a journal. I'm a person that believes in journaling, and not journaling as how today was, but journaling on your roadmap. And, you know, what are the things that interest you? During that time of finding the things that interest you, how willing are you able to be transparent to people? Even though it's a career that's not a professional career, you know, as an artist, people think artists are people that really don't want to have real jobs and just want to do fluff. That's it. But if you look at people that are artists, and that's across the board, and what I mean about across the board is we're all artists in our own fashion. You know, as an engineer, you have to be creative in orchestrating the design of the program that you're writing. As a teacher, you have to be specific about how you're going to strategically teach and creatively teach your students. You don't want it to be boring, or else you lose their attention, right? So I think across the board, it's important that we understand that we're all artists. And one of the tips is journaling. One of the tips is writing down what are your interests. And one of the tips eventually is to share those things with someone that you trust, someone that's going to believe in you, someone that's going to see the aspirations in you, someone that's going to encourage you. Those are my three top strategies in sharing with people when they're curious about, well, what is my purpose? And start those creative juices flowing.
I think that's great. I think that's great. Well, Melissa, I want to thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate your tips and strategies and sharing some of your top projects with us.
Well, thank you so very much, Judy, for this opportunity. And I would love to leave a quote, Dr. King. It weighs on my heart so dearly that I really do enjoy sharing with people. It's not about the fame, it's not about the money, it's about the service that you serve to others in your community and in your state, and growing all the way to national and then global.
Very well said. Thank you, Melissa.
You're very welcome. Have a blessed day.
Tune into part two of my interview with Melissa Fontanette Mitchell. And thank you for listening to Stories of Change and Creativity. Check out the show notes for more information about this episode and Melissa Fontanette Mitchell. You can find this podcast on any of your favorite streaming platforms. If you have a story to tell or know someone who does, reach out to me at judyoscom.com. Thanks for listening.